Good morning. Today is Tuesday, May the 16th. Got the day right, got the month right. You are Dave Hall, right?
I am.
All right. Hey, yeah. I'm shooting perfect
you're
now.
You're doing good. You're doing good today, Brian.
3 for 3. I mean, can it get any better than that? We'll go 4 for 4 here and see if I can read a quote, huh?
You're pushing your luck.
Yeah, I know. A good quote, too. Oh, this is cool. Malcolm, somebody or another, to Chazal, C-H-A-Z-A-L.
Somebody or other? That's Greek?
Yeah. Well, D, so okay. It's probably French. Cool quote, either way. The ring always believes that the finger lives for it.
There you
Isn't
go.
That, yeah, that actually, that could be a term paper.
It could.
That'd be a whole lot more interesting than what Mrs. Connors gave us. Hi, Greg. Yeah. Her son. Yeah. Former councilman.
There you go.
You know,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Budgets oftentimes, Dave, are talked about this time of the year by various governmental entity types. Okay, fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Until we get things like rate increases and taxes. We get a little attention, but we talked about that a couple of times. Are budgets also kind of your template for capital improvements and long-term investments, or is that kind of tracked in a different document in a different silo, so to speak?
Well, in our world.
Oh, by the way, Dave Hall from the Humboldt Community Services District. Not just any old Dave Hall.
Yeah.
The
There you go.
Dave
yeah.
Hall.
The other one's out in the parking lot.
Yeah. Driving off in your car. Yeah.
I think in the public works world, the capital improvement program and the budgets, they really go hand in hand. You know, they're both planning tools. You know, things happen, that things change. So we're not working in a world of absolutes with either one of them. But certainly the amount of money that an organization has to spend on its capital improvement programs, which, you know, is just a piece of the overall operation of the agency, certainly drives what you can get done. And from the budget perspective, you know how much money you have you want a program to use for capital projects. And then from that, you go through a process typically of prioritization, because there's In a public works world, there's a never-ending, you know, list of things you could do.
What do you mean in the public? As if
public
there's
works
not
are,
in
well,
the
I'm
private.
Talking, no,
give
I'm
me a break.
I'm, no. I'm just talking public works as the you know, fixing pipes and treatment plants and buying equipment and stuff like that. Well, it does fit in the
transmitters, phasers, yeah. Antennas. Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. Computers. Yeah. I think we both. Yeah. See.
So and I bet you prioritize, right? Based on your budget.
Yeah, what's on fire today?
And can I afford it? Yeah.
Yeah,
so we have the same outlook.
Yeah. But if you have a fire, you put it out with the water.
That's right.
Yeah, for me, I got to pay you to
put
it.
For the water.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's not quite the same.
No, it works great.
So it's a management guide as much as anything?
Yeah, they both are. But I think the bigger point, and I think this is where you were going, is that the exercise of doing an annual review of both the very public review of the budget, and then in our case, and in a lot of the public works agencies around here, we do a rolling 5-year capital improvement program. So you can look out a few years, and that gives you some ability to kind of move the projects around so you can fit the budget for the time.
It's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the Dave Hull from the Humble Community Services District. The cash flow cycles are, I think you guys are probably more different, special districts, than any other governmental entity. And it's not because of the jurisdiction. It's not because of the narrow focus. It's not because of the award-winning staff. Sorry.
Which are all important.
Yeah, critical.
Yeah.
But you don't get your money lump sum.
That's right.
You have this thing called cash flow that is a little different than most of the others that get the dump from Sacramento or the feds, and boom, there it is. And now you know certain, I guess, what you got to work with, and now you pace it out. So you can do your capital big investment projects July 15th, and you know the money's there. You guys, not so much so. Is that a complicator?
It is a complicator. And the one, the interesting piece, very timely conversation, didn't affect us too much, but a little bit, was the drought. So we plan a budget out. We say we've got this amount of money that we're predicting we're going to have, and so we build the budget around that and the capital improvements around that. Well, then the governor comes along and says, you got to cut back 20% on what you sell. And the population around here does good at meeting the challenge, but that means we got, you know, X percent. It wasn't 20%, but it was certainly, probably 12-15% for the district of less income based on the water conservation. You know, we sell water. So when the governor says don't sell water, and we've planned for that revenue, then we do some, adjustments.
In that scenario where it's more of an edict from Mount High, are there, I know this sounds, you know, sound like a cream puff question, but were there any monies that came along with it and said, don't worry about it, we're going to backfill you in, kind of as a carrot and a stick? So you achieve these goals, and there'll be the equivalent of bonus so that you're not in a situation where you're strapped. If you're in mid-project, you can complete the project instead of having to have it sit there for another funding cycle because you don't have the revenue stream.
Yeah, well, it's complicated, but basically the answer is, heck no, they don't give us any money for anything. They make these things, they say, this mandate doesn't create a financial mandate, and so we're not obligated to give you any money for it, even though you have to do it. So by putting a simple line in any of the bills, which they put in almost all the bills, they can wash themselves of it, and it becomes our problem down here at the local level.
Is it worth trying to make us stink about, or is it just the way the game gets played?
It's always worth it because it's the right thing to do, but it's B, what you said. It really doesn't matter.
So the State Water Board really wasn't there as a voice for local water districts. It was there put in place more as a controlling agent or entity?
Correct. Their role is to tell us what to do. And we get to figure out how to make that work.
So they're not your buds.
No. And I don't think they're. You know, we look at it, and I think a lot of local agencies look at it that we're here to help people succeed. And so when there's, let's say we have some rules, you're building a subdivision, you have to get permits and things and whatever. We're going to help you try and comply with what we have. We're not going to just write a ticket and say you did it wrong and whatever. The state takes the other mentality, though, generally speaking. And sometimes there's some notable exceptions where they are helpful. But honestly, they're pretty few and far between. Their generally approach is, we came up with this wonderful idea, and so go do it. Or we'll fine you. I mean, the rules that are going through the state right now, it's a couple of bills that the administration has proposed on the drought stuff. You know, they ran out of the ability to call it an emergency, so now they're going to turn it into law. So they've got a couple of bills. The bills are very heavy on the punitive. You know, you, by gosh, we're going to fine you if you don't do this, and fine you if you don't do that, and you have to come up with all these programs and spend all this money to do all these special assessments and special surveys and special studies to satisfy what we told you to do.
Where are McGuire and Wood on those?
They vote for them. They haven't yet. Now, let me back up. That wasn't fair at all. So on this particular issue, there is two competing bills. The industry of all the public water agencies, a large number of public water agencies, state of California, have introduced their own set of, this is the way it really ought to be, kind of going back to the approach that I mentioned to you. You know, trying to make it work, trying to satisfy the philosophical goals of the state, but also make it, at the same time, try to make it a something that's practical and is something that will really make a real difference for us. Those two bills have gone through the, let's see, the first place they started was the Assembly Water Parks, with a comma in between. It's not Water Parks Committee, and they voted, the committee, which included Woods, voted for those alternative bills.
Yours or the state's?
No, ours.
Did they now, also the committee, vote for the other one as well?
The committee, he didn't, but the committee did vote for the other two also. So they kind of passed them along. They passed the pro and con bill out of committee and let appropriations worry about it was the next step. So,
and appropriations is the funding.
Right.
And if there's no funding associated with it, that's a slam dunk.
If they say, yeah, you get to pay for it, so.
So who do you got to get to? Who's in the machine where you could put something in the cog and get them to throw a timeout? Or is this just more government bureaucracy at the state level?
It's just the way the machine works. Yeah, the governor's office has what they think is the right solution, and the us on the ground have a different solution, and so it's unfortunately sort of a competition in a way, who makes the best pitch and makes the best thing. Of course, on our side, we think we do because we have practical solutions from where we are.
Yeah, it's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Dave, looking at some of the different aspects of having your budget, having your capital improvements plan that are in place, how do you build the flexibility to deal with what you know is coming, but you don't know what shape, what form, or what time? Contingency just sounds like you had a lobotomy. Everybody has one, right?
Right.
And you don't have to think too much about it, but you know you're going to have some issues. You know there's some things that are close to the end of their life. You know, based on this year, where challenges are going to be coming. Do you set aside kind of like contingency funds for types of things and kind of earmark it and kind of designate it, or do you just have a general fund? In the good old days, it was called a slush fund.
Yeah.
Just a fund that's sitting there to be able to be used for anything.
Yeah, well, yes and no. The fund that we have is in our speak is the fund reserves. So we try to build in our rate structure, and we try to build in every year in our budgeting and our capital improvement spending, some ability to put some of that money in a reserve fund so that those unexpected things that come up, we have the funding for that. So,
but you don't have like a silo one for water stations or your pump stations, or one for pipes and one for gear.
Correct. On the reserve side, we don't. We have a kind of a special reserve fund that's part of a contractual obligation with the city of Eureka for the wastewater treatment plant. But in the general reserve, it's not segregated. It's based around a policy of having 60 days of operating expenses on hand, which is a little over $1 million for our district.
You get paid a lot.
Yeah. Well, we do a lot.
Of operating, okay.
Yeah.
You must have a PG&E bill or something that's in their addition.
Yeah, so if you back up to the budget itself, though, and there is actually segregation there. There's a water fund, there's a sewer fund, and then we have the ability, because of some old pre-Prop 13 property tax thing, we get a little bit of property tax, and that goes into what we call our general fund. So the PG&E expenses for the streetlights, our 524 streetlights we have in the district, that comes out of the general fund. But we segregate the water and the sewer into their own funds.
How much does a streetlight cost?
Oh, to put in?
Either a new one or and then obviously the compendium is to operate.
Yeah, well, It's a variable thing. It doesn't cost all that much to operate a month, you know, $20, something like that. But it does the installation, and there's various ways of doing it. There's the wood poles, there's the metal poles, there's, you know, the different kinds of mastheads, there's a decorative light somewhere. But I'm going to say, let's say if you start from scratch with something, it's probably $5,000.
Per light, and then... Yeah. You have to still get the power to the light or by the solar panel.
Yeah, well, and PG&E does all of that for us, and PG&E bills us for the power. But we have an arrangement with them, and this is common everywhere, that that we pick up the tab for those, and we'll make the calls when street light's out. So if anybody has a street light that's out or flickering or something like that, give me a call, and we'll put it in the system and get PG&E to fix it.
Unless you're living in Crescent City.
Yeah, well,
you're probably not going to step up.
I'm not going to do that. No. Yeah, no. I could help, but yeah. You know.
What about the solar? I mean, is that something that is in contingency plans? Is that in budget for power use, whether it's on the light stands themselves or for the office or any of the pump stations? Is that something that I know some jurisdictions are doing that with a telephone or the power light? Streetlights. Where did I see? Oh, Klamath, where the Yurochs are doing their work. Every one of them's got a one-by-one little square on top of it. I mean, it looks a whole lot better than seeing a bunch of power lines all over the place.
Well, yeah. As far as solar-operated lights here, solar-powered lights, PG&E hasn't made that option really available for our area here, so... we haven't. We have looking bigger and broader. You mentioned pumps and things like that. You know, our pumping is where we spend the most electricity, the most dollars on electricity, and you have to have quite a solar array to operate a pump, and we really don't have the pump, the space at a pump station for that kind of stuff. We've gone through a couple of different studies on that. Certainly for the corp yard and things, but there really isn't that much demand at the corp yard, you know, for the office and whatever to justify that expense. And on the other hand, we don't have the room to put enough solar panels to operate the pumps either. So it's something we're going to continue to look at as technology gets better and stuff. But that's certainly, the pumps are the energy eaters. And there's got a lot of them.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, with some of the different pieces of gear that are out there now versus 10 years, 15, 20 years ago, there are a lot of efficiencies now that occur. How often do you replace? Is there a plan for replacement of some of these things to take advantage of some of either the better efficiencies, or just so you don't get surprised and all of a sudden it kind of comes to a stop and uh-oh, because I don't think there's probably too many of these things available on shelves at vendors where you can call them up and have it overnighted.
Well, honestly, there is. You're talking the pumps and whatever. It is a national network that you go find one, but we can. You know, it's not like we have atypical stuff. They are big and expensive, but they're not custom made necessarily either.
So they are standardized.
Standardized, yeah, to a certain extent. And so those are available. What we've tried to do, because we are remote and because our pumps are critical to our the way we operate our infrastructure, and we have so many of them, that we have a lot of spares that we have that are here, that so that if something happens, we can change them out pretty quick and keep the customers in either water or sewer service.
That's got to be a nice luxury.
Yeah.
KINS. News and information time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Dave Hall.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Main construction season for the Community Services District.
We've got some kind of interesting stuff planned for this year. If you're a public works wonky kind of person, this is great stuff. We're replacing, we've talked about this in the past, but it's been put off due to budget constraints and some other financial factors. But I think we're going to be able to actually drill a new well, a replacement well, out on South Broadway down there. The district has three water wells that basically feed the southern part of the district, so Humble Hill and Fields Landing, King Sam, and that kind of area. It does have the ability to feed back into the Pine Hill and, you know, up into the main part of the district, but generally they're for the south part. Three wells. South Bay Well went offline probably 3 or 4 years ago, and due to some structural issues with it. And so we're pretty close. If the budget goes the way we're hoping, sometime in July, August, we're going to put it out to bid to actually drill that new well, which is kind of interesting. It's 450 feet deep, 12-inch casing on it. We're looking to get around 1,000 gallons a minute out of it. That's what its predecessor did. And it would still be doing if not for the casing issues.
This is the one that's in the swamp across from the nuclear plant?
Yeah. It's on the edge of the swamp.
Yeah. And 450 down, is that's where you get fresh water?
Yes. Yeah, well, there's several lenses, but there's a great aquifer down in that, about 350 down to probably 500 feet. There's a great aquifer down in the Elk River Valley there.
So you go down a little bit deeper than you need to, because that's where the...
Yes. Yep.
The good water is.
That's where the good water is. That's where the volume is. We don't have to worry about drawing it down so much. That aquifer's always been a great producer for everything. And like I said, we have two other wells that are operating there right now also.
So when that guy comes on, does that give you surplus?
It gives us surplus. It gives us so we don't have to run the other wells to death to kind of keep up with the demand down there. We can meter them around. It also gives us a measure of self-sustainability. If something happens to the Big Mad River pipeline that comes up from Humble Bay Municipal Water District to the city of Eureka, ultimately to us, then if something happens to that, we have the ability to backfeed water into our system. It won't be, you know, as much water as everybody uses every day, but it's going to be enough to keep us going.
So less reliant, does that mean cost savings to the customer? Because you're not having to buy off of the other source?
Well, to a certain extent, yeah. It's really more on the flexibility side is where we get the advantage.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you,
Mr. Flexible. Yeah. See everybody tomorrow morning.